Welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. We take life's most difficult questions, concerns, and challenges and turn them into manageable nuggets of information so that you can make the best decisions when you are planning for tomorrow. You can contact us at pftradio@gmail.com. You can check us out on Facebook, Planning for Tomorrow Radio, or if you're calling from the local listening area, 304-399-8255, or long distance, 877-420-8255.
A ragged rim of splintered trees on a hill close to Huntington's Tri-State Airport shows where the DC-9 carrying the Marshall University football team and others scraped yesterday before piling into the next hill. Special FBI agents are working over the charred remains of the planes, 75 passengers and crew. At least 46 of the bodies are those of Marshall football players and coaches. National Transportation Secretary, National Transportation Safety Board Director, John Reed, is in Huntington, where he is beginning a month-long probe of the tragedy. Federal officials say the aircraft's flight recorder has been recovered and forwarded to Washington for analysis. It was the only chartered flight the Marshall team was to take this year. The team traveled to other away games by bus. It was also only the first accident involving a Southern Airways chartered jet in its 21 years of existence.
Well, hello and welcome to Planning for Tomorrow. Fred Kitchen right here with you. And I know many of our listeners today listening to that newscast, and it's taken a lot of people back to a time in their life that they'll never forget. And then for some, maybe it's new to hear that, or maybe they've heard it in the past with being a Huntington resident or a tri-state resident. But today, our show today, we're going to be talking about the event that took place in 1970, November 14th, 1970, which was the Marshall plane crash. And I'm going to kind of talk about that today. And on the phone with me, I have Coach Jack Lingle, and I want to talk just a minute here about just a few things that Coach Lingle has been involved with as far as a career. You know, it kind of started out for him, looked like here in 1957, freshman football coach at Akron University, and went all the way up to a lot of other at Cornell University, Heidelberg College, then College of Worcester, which any of us that's familiar with the movie We Are Marshall is going to understand, know a little bit about College of Worcester. And then in 1971 to 1974, the head football coach of Marshall University, where he began building the Marshall football program following the tragic airplane crash involving the entire team, coaching staff, and administrators, and a lot of the leading citizens here in Huntington, West Virginia. And Jack is also a member of a lot of other football associations, National Football Foundation and College Hall of Fame. Jack, are you with me?
Yes, I am.
Your resume just goes on and on and on. We could do a whole show on the resume. Glad to have you along with us from Arizona.
Thank you very much, Brad. Good to be with you.
Jack, you know, I want to take today and just talk a little bit about, we mentioned here a minute ago that 2 days ago, we were honoring something that happened, an event that happened here in Huntington, West Virginia, and was felt really around the world, around the country. And I want to talk to you just a little bit. I felt like that you would be able to give a lot of insight to those here in town as far as some of the things that you were involved in. And I want to start, kind of go back, and I guess to your days at Worcester. And after you learned about the Marshall plane crash and you heard about that, how did you actually go about accepting the coach's job and inquiring about that? And upon accepting that job, you had to have a ton of challenges. Can we talk just a little bit about that?
Well, basically, everyone in the country, as you well know and said, that saw the story about the Marshall plane crash, and so everyone probably followed it, and I did, with great interest, and I saw where they offered the job to a Penn head football coaching job to a Penn State coach, and he turned it down. And then about a month later, another coach was offered the position and just stayed several days, and then resigned for personal reasons. And I got to think, well, maybe I can help. And so I called the athletic director and applied, and then went down for an interview and was accepted as the head football coach with about 31 days to go before spring practice.
That didn't give you a whole lot of time to put something together, did it?
No, it was quite a rush for the entire process.
Yeah. You know, in coming to Huntington, West Virginia, you were moving, you were coming to Huntington, you were coming back not only to a what there wasn't a program in place at this point, but I want to talk about the rebuilding a little bit. Not only were you going to have to bring students on board, bring some players on board, and try to put a program back together, you were going to have to, you were going to be, I guess, thrust into a lot of emotions that was going on in the community also. So I guess my question to you, what are some of the challenges that you didn't even realize that when you came to Huntington, that you when you were going to take this team, when you said, that, hey, yeah, I accept this job, what were some of the things that you dealt with as far as from building a team, from getting players, and as far as being involved with community? Because there was a lot of things going on with community, because we didn't only just lose football players. We lost business people. We lost supporters of the team. We lost athletic director, you know, coaches. We lost a lot of people.
Well, first of all, when I accepted the position, I came down with the understanding I was going to rebuild a football team. And certainly, as you have stated, when I arrived, I quickly found out that there were 24 boosters on the plane, four doctors and their wives, another doctor, a state senator, city councilman, key leaders in the community, dean of admissions, director of athletics, trainers, managers, coaches, radio personnel, and 37 players, and then 70 children without one parent and 18 without two parents. So
right.
It took a wide swath out of the Huntington community.
Right. Well, you know, I mean, that was, like you said, that was it took a big part out of the community, as well as, you know, you become more of a, would you feel like that you kind of become somewhat of a counselor in your own way, in your own right, to a certain extent also? I mean, here you thinking, okay, I'm going to come back and put a football program together. I'm going to get some players, and we're going to do something here. But then not only, you were dealing with football players that had lost friends. You were dealing with other students on campus that had lost friends. And then you had the whole dynamic of town, of all the townspeople that had lost family and friends. So there was a lot of dynamics going on. So you were kind of thrust into something more than just being a coach.
Well, it was certainly a very big challenge. We did not see it as it was portrayed in the movie. I just saw it as an opportunity to build a football team and try to pull everybody together. But when I got there, everybody was already, they were still recovering from the tragedy. But I also understood a little later on, I did not know this when I arrived, that a small minority of the Marshall faculty wanted to drop football. But the big Green Booster Club and the community of Marshall University, as I found out, their heart beat as one.
Right.
And Dr. Dedman made the decision to continue football to honor the 75 people that perished in the tragic plane crash. So that was, when I got there, everybody was willing to pull together and try to move forward from this tragedy.
Right. Yeah, that had to be something that was tough for everybody, because it would have been, you know, we all know that when we deal with our own personal tragedies, sometimes we feel like it's just so easy, let's just give up, let's just quit what we've been doing and move on to something else. But to actually rebuild something, it's a big deal, especially when you have community involved. I want to talk just a few minutes here about who some of the main individuals were that assisted you in the rebuilding. I know that you, when you put a team together, you've got to have people that surround you that's going to be support to you, that's going to do other things. And in putting a team together, you had to put a coaching staff together too.
Well, the first thing, I believe that when I arrived, the Marshall University staff and the administration and athletic department and the Big Green and the entire community of Huntington were all behind the rebuilding process and lent their support. And I was very, very blessed to have that type of support while we were there. And as I said, I never even heard for maybe even a year later that there was any animosity to by a small minority of the faculty that wanted to drop football.
Right.
So everybody was very supportive. And some of my closest friends, obviously, just to mention a few of them, which is a difficult time because I'm going to leave some people out, I know, but the Lowell and Sarah Stanley were my closest friends there. And, of course, the Hamer family and Marcus and Georgia Diniaco. And then Glenn Glenn Queen and his family, and many, many more, including Governor Arch Moore, who helped us in our recruiting of players.
Right. Hey, Jack, I want to take just a quick commercial break, if that's okay with you. We need to do that, and we'll come right back, and I want to pick up right where we left off, if that's okay with you. Is that all right?
Fine.
Okay, you're listening to Planning for Tomorrow on 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC.
No, sir. I ain't got nothing to say. But they do.
Right thing to do, sir.
Son, we do not have a team. We do not have a staff. We don't even have athletic director. May he rest in peace. And frankly, son, I wouldn't know where to begin.
But you can start with a coach, sir.
And Jack, that's exactly what happened. They started with a coach, and you ended up being that coach. And we've been talking to Jack Lingle here on the phone with us today with the Planning for Tomorrow show, talking about the Marshall plane crash 42 years ago today. You know, when we left for break, we were talking about a lot of the people who were influential in helping you put this program back together and supporting you. Support, you know, when we think of a support staff, it's not always the staff. The staff is very important, but sometimes it's the community friends and, like you said, Big Green and a lot of things like that, people like that that really helped you put this back together. But I want to talk a little bit about recruiting new players. And, you know, any of us that watched the movie We Are Marshall, I know there's things in that movie, and I want to mention this right here since I was going that direction. The We Are Marshall, that necessarily wasn't something that was said back in the 70s, right?
Well, that is correct. That was a cheer that came much later, but McGee, the director, happened to pick it up, and I think it is really, really appropriate in the sense that it shows the commitment of the community and the university and the state of West Virginia.
Right.
So I was very pleased that they inserted that, even though it was not a cheer that we used at that particular time. I think it really exemplifies the bonding of the complete state, university, students, people, players, et cetera. So I think it was a brilliant move.
I think it was, too. And, you know, what we've seen with that, with games and even commercials that play in our area, we'll hear the We Are Marshall in the background. And it's really kind of – it's been interesting that chant, I guess you would say, We Are Marshall, has really kind of united a community, even individuals and even youngsters that may not even been born at that time. That has allowed them to have this insight and to go back. Because, you know, a lot of times young people don't always go back and revisit history and like they should. And I think that has really kind of been able to bring people together right there. But let's go back to talking about the recruiting of some new players. That had to be pretty difficult. And the movie kind of portrayed some things in there of how you went about getting some of those players and had to be difficult. Can you talk just a little bit about your process there?
Well, it was very difficult at the very beginning because we did not have the rule from the NCAA regarding playing freshmen.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing we did when we got there as a coaching staff, before we hired the other coaches, including the new coaches that we had to put on the staff, we had to evaluate the current freshman team. And I came to find out that other universities came in right after the crash and recruited players off the team. So
oh, wow.
Team was not the full freshman team that we had, and it was very similar to the situation that Penn State had this year, where other colleges came in and took advantage of the circumstances. And I was under the impression that we received the permission to play freshmen immediately, but I subsequently found a letter from the NCAA rejecting our first request, but I know, I would imagine within several days after that, the request was granted, and we did receive freshman eligibility, and that was a great, great help to us, because then we could talk to players about the opportunity to help rebuild a Division I-A program and the opportunity to start as freshmen. And that turned a lot of things around with regards to our recruiting and was very, very helpful. And so we were very, very pleased with that particular ruling. But obviously, in the NCAA's infinite wisdom, they gave freshman eligibility to the entire country the next year. Had we had that freshman eligibility for 4 years, I think we would have really quickened the pace on the rebuilding of the Marshall University football program.
That could have been a whole different outcome if they hadn't granted that to you also.
Yes, that's correct.
You know, and one of the other things that comes to my mind in thinking about that was when you did recruit this team and when you did recruit the football players, you know, in the movie it talks about that there were some of the basketball players that we were looking at, that you were looking at, all the different type of players that you were looking at that maybe didn't have football experience, strong football experience. So that was what you was rebuilding from also, right?
Yes, we had quite an eclectic group of people when we put that team together. That is exactly right.
Kind of a ragtag, but turned out to be okay.
Well, I would never call them ragtag. I would call them committed young men. The one thing you could criticize them or criticize the play of them was the lack of experience, but
right.
That was inherent because they were all freshmen.
Right.
But you could never criticize them for their dedication, their perseverance, their willingness to work, be in top physical shape, and their willingness to make a commitment and be selfless.
Right.
Of themselves to give to others to pull a full football team together.
Well, and for those guys also, you know, we got to look at it from their standpoint also. They were coming in and with really something that was going to be brand new at this point. And so they were taking a lot of risk themselves with just kind of stepping out there and going, you know, I'll give it a try, you know. So, yeah, we've got to give them a lot of credit for what they were able to step up and do. Because really, you know, you look, everything's built on history. We look back at history and where we are today. There's sometimes that we look at direction takes us a different way, but for the most part, if it wasn't for them, that foundation that you established, the foundation that those players established back in 71, we might not have had the accomplishments that Marshall has been able to have over the past several years.
Well, you've had some great coaches that followed me, and certainly the one that took us to the pinnacle of success was Bobby Pruitt.
Absolutely. Yeah, Bobby was a swell coach. He really was well respected still yet today. So one of the things that I want to mention that I think would be interesting to the listeners is there's a scene in the movie, the We Are Marshall movie, where the players are at the cemetery and there's a speech being given, Matthew McConaughey. And I got to say, you know, in looking at you and looking at Matthew McConaughey, they really picked someone that had the same physique and the same looks. Wouldn't you agree?
Well. Tell everybody that I certainly had the six pack, but when I tell everybody my sideburns weren't that long, I didn't have a 5 o'clock shadow, I did not dress like Bozo the Clown, but he took great liberties with my persona. But he is an excellent actor, and interesting point, when I was on the set with him, he made everyone call him Coach Langle.
Mm-hmm.
While he was doing all the scenes and so forth. He was a very good guy and a very likable person, and was very easygoing and sharing his opportunities with the community. And the only thing I would say about, he's a little quirky, but a good guy, and he did an excellent job. He's a fine actor.
Yeah, exactly. Well, like you said, I mean, that's Hollywood sometimes too, though, isn't it? I mean, I guess they take that creative liberty, I guess they say, creative liberty to be able to do that. So that's where the beautiful wardrobe come into play.
Well, that's an interesting story in and of itself. That was the first scene where the basketball players, and I had breakfast with him for about 2 hours that morning, and then when he was on the set, he had a red checkered jacket, white with red checks in it, and then a green paisley tie. And I walked up to Matthew, and I started to rub my fingers on the sleeve, and I said, Matthew, let me just say something to you. In my wildest dreams, I'd never wear this frickin' jacket. And he laughed. He said, I know Sandy didn't pick this tie out. I said, you can count on that one.
Yeah, that was just kind of, that kind of went with the territory, I guess, of being a 70s movie. But, you know, they take their liberty sometimes, that's for sure.
Well, they don't let the facts get in the way of a good movie.
No, they don't. They don't. They sure don't. Jack, you know, I want to take just another quick break, if we could, here, and we'll come back, and there's some other things that I want to talk about. I want to kind of lead up here just a little bit and talk about, when we come back, you were known for giving a speech in the cemetery there, in the movie, about Funerals End Today. And I want to talk a little bit about that when we come back. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow on 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC.
We may be behind on the scoreboard at the end of the game, but if you play like that, we cannot be defeated. And we came here today to remember. Six young men. And 69 others. Who will not be on the field with you today. But they will be watching. You can bet that they'll be gritting their teeth with every snap of that football. You understand me? How you play today, from this moment on, is how you will be remembered. This is your opportunity to rise from these ashes and grab glory.
Back to Planning for Tomorrow, and we are commemorating 42 years, 2 days ago. 42 years ago was the Marshall plane crash and the rebuilding thereafter, start of the new Marshall football program. And on the phone with me from Arizona, we have Coach Jack Lingle. You know, when we come back from that that break right there, there was a clip from the movie that was played, and that was an actual cemetery scene. And I've talked to a lot of people. That was highly motivating to a lot of people. And I know we talked a little while ago about the We Are Marshall come later, the chant kind of came later and was kind of used in the movie. But I want to talk just a few minutes, Jack, and see if you can give us a little insight. You did take the team to the Marshall Memorial, right?
Yes, we particularly the first year, the reason we went up there, we went at 6 o'clock in the morning, and the only people that went up were the football team, the managers, trainers, and coaches. Mm-hmm. We never told the administration, boosters, newspapers, TV. No one ever knew about this story. In fact, when Warner Brothers came down, that's the first time anyone had heard of it, or even it was even publicized, to be honest with you. I took them up there basically to let them know who they were playing for, and to look at the obelisk with the names of all the players and the six blank markers, the unidentified players, and wanted them to know that these were their teammates. That's why we went up there with our staff and everybody. It was our private moment, and we did that for 4 years.
The one scene in the movie where it says, Funerals End Today, was that a Jack Lingle line or was that a Matthew McConaughey line? How was that?
Well, I said that, but I didn't say that at the Spring Hill Cemetery. I said it about the second game, a second away game, because what was happening is that every school wanted to have a pregame memorial service. Mm. And so I told them I needed that the funeral needed to end and this team needed to move forward, and that while we really appreciated their empathy, we just felt that the funeral must end and we must continue our road to recovery. And then from there, the newspapers picked up that statement.
Yeah. Well, it had to be tough for the 71 team. Here, these guys were coming out, putting their heart and soul on the line and trying to rebuild. And then when they would go to games, I mean, that a memorial for the team that had passed, that could be a downer for the guys. And it was kind of hard, probably hard to build morale, wasn't it, around that?
Well, I don't think it was a downer. It certainly was one of respect.
Sure.
And we certainly looked at it in that way. But I thought it was important that we move forward with this team and the rebuilding of the football program at Marshall University.
Right. We talked a little bit a while ago about the NCAA. Was that difficult in getting that? You had a shortage of personnel. We talked about that. But was that difficult process getting the freshmen eligible for football? Was it a long, drawn-out process, or was that really a quick process?
I was under the impression, because I was not involved in the process, our athletic director, Joe McMullen, handled that. We started our recruiting, and obviously we didn't have that particular process in place, and it was a difficult recruiting. The freshman eligibility gave us an edge in recruiting, and it was just a matter of weeks before we got the freshman eligibility, which allowed us the opportunity that we needed to get an edge on recruiting.
Yeah, and I think that definitely gave you what you needed right there when you were able to open that door right there.
That is correct.
We talked about some of the 70 team players. I want to talk about some of the 71 team players, key players that come on board, and some of their backgrounds. I want to kind of talk a little bit about that again also. Some of the guys that really were standouts that helped you, I guess, from the get-go. I know there was some that probably had to that volunteered, that wanted to be part of the team. And who were some of those guys that you would consider? I know they were, when you were talking about a team, it's hard to pick out any one person or two or three people. There is always some that rises to the top that is special and helps make something really happen. You care to talk a little bit about those guys?
Basically, we had the freshman team that was ineligible to play as a varsity football team. And so they played probably, I believe, three JV games. So that was their experience at the college level. And then we had three players from Buffalo, New York, Buffalo drop football, and I hired Jim McNally, the line coach from there, and he brought those three players with him, and they all became starters. And then, as you had mentioned once before, there were three former basketball players at Marshall University played out their fifth year of NCAA eligibility in football, and all of them contributed. Then we had walk-ons, ex-Marines, policemen, and a hippie soccer kicker named Blake Smith, who provided the margin of victory against Xavier in our first game, which we won 15-13. And on a great play call, 5-13 bootleg throwback pass from Reggie Oliver to Terry Gardner, and it was called by Red Dawson with about 12 seconds. He was up in the box with about 12 seconds to go, and we completed it with no time on the clock, and that for our first win for the young Thundering Herd. And I'll never forget the jubilation and joy on that field by the team and coaches, Father Scott, and all the fans that came over the wall onto the field, and all the fans that stayed in the stadium till late that evening. You see, everybody had a teammate, a classmate, a friend, a neighbor on that plane, and that's why they wanted to stay and share those memories together.
Well, had to be a time of a change of dynamics for the team and for the community at that point right there. When you said they stayed on the team that late, or on the field that late, I mean that was a time of change, wasn't it?
Well, it showed that we could win a football game, that we could run the Houston Veer offense.
Yeah,
that we could be successful on defense. And our kicking game obviously played a great role and gave us the margin of victory. And so I think that was the beginning of the Young Thundering Herd's success to continue the building the foundation for Marshall University's football team to be rebuilt.
Jack, we need to take one more quick break. And when we come back, I want to talk. You mentioned something there that's going to be very interesting. Talk about the Houston Veer and Bobby Bowden. I definitely want to talk a little bit about that. You can stay with us, right?
Yes, I can.
Okay. You're listening to Planning for Tomorrow on 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC. And we're back to Planning for Tomorrow, and we've got Jack Lingle with us. Jack, when we left for break, we were talking about the Houston Veer. And I got a question for you there about Bobby Bowden, who was then the West Virginia football coach. And tell us a little bit about, we've seen a scene in the movie that talks a little bit about how he was helpful and the team and you guys using the Houston Veer. Can you talk a little bit about their help in Marshall and things like that?
Well, first of all, when I was at the College of Worcester, my mentors were Woody Hayes and Bo Schembechler and Ara Parseghian. So I ran a power offense. It was a power set, and we ran more than we passed. As a result, that requires strong linemen, and you don't get a good lineman for at least until 2 years where he gets the experience to be a strong blocker. Mm-hmm. And so we were running a power offense, and when I went down there and interviewed the freshman team that was available, we had a couple of about two or three good receivers and a couple quarterbacks that could throw, and the rest were very inexperienced. I looked up and saw where Bobby Bowden was running the Houston Veer offense. Well, the Houston Veer is a concept offense. You just don't run one of their plays.
Right.
And what it is if we'd have lined up in a T formation, they defenses would have stunted on us. We wouldn't have made the length of our nose. But with the Houston Veer, you put two wide receivers out. They've got to put two wide receivers out. And then you seal block to the inside, and our players could scramble and cut block going inside. But the real pressure then came, it's 9-on-9 now. The real pressure comes from the fact that the quarterback now has to be an option quarterback. Well, Reggie had never run an option before. He was a drop back passer and an excellent passer. And so he had a very difficult time learning the option in the sense that you have to time it. A good option quarterback takes at least 2 years to develop the offense. We didn't have 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And so Reggie jumped right in there and did a very admirable job and got better with each particular game. We saw Bobby was running the Veer up there, so we called him and we went up. He invited us up. We watched practice in the morning. In the afternoon, Frank Signetti, his offensive quarterback coach, taught us the offense. And then we watched film till late in the evening. And after 3 days, we simplified it, modified it, came back down, and within 3 days was teaching the Houston Veer offense while we were learning it as well as the players were learning it. And Bobby certainly facilitated all that. Bobby is a very, very close friend to this day. Our families used to go to an FCA camp at Jackson Mills for 2 or 3 years, and we've been close for all these years, and Bobby was a tremendous help. He was as much a part of the success of our Marshall, rebuilding Marshall football program, as any one of us here on our football staff.
Oh, I would say. You know, there was something I wanted to kind of mention here. The president at the time, President Richard Nixon, he sent the team an encouraging letter. And can you tell us a little bit about that and how you shared that with the team?
Well, on the first day of practice, I received a letter from the White House. Basically, it said, "Dear Coach Lingle, there will be a deep sense of sadness as Marshall University football team begins this season, but it will be mixed with warm pride that last year's freshmen have responded so positively to the great tragedy that struck your campus. The 1970 varsity players could have little greater tribute paid to their memory than the determination to field a team this year. Friends across the land will be rooting for you, but whatever the season brings, you have already won your greatest victory by putting the 1971 varsity squad on the field. Congratulations to you and every member of your team. Sincerely, Richard Nixon."
Wow. Now that had to be motivating not only to you but to the team to receive something like that. That's pretty powerful.
Very powerful, and I read that to the team on the first day of spring practice, and then I had a copy made for every one of the players and coaches.
Wow, very nice, very nice. I want to kind of move into a different direction here about that was had to be a little difficult to even think about, but when the team learned, the 71 team learned that they were going to have to fly for the very first time, the very, very first time of this new season. Was that difficult for many? What was that like?
The first game that we were going to fly was Northern Illinois. And so that Sunday when we met with the team to review film, I told the team that we were flying to Northern Illinois for the next week's football game and that whoever did not want to fly did not have to fly. But at some time in the future, they would have to face their fear of flying. And only one person did not fly.
Mm-hmm.
And the next time we flew, he was on the plane.
Wow. Yeah, that had to be difficult. I mean, it's one of those things that you had to make yourself do. You had to make yourself go through to get past that fear. So that
Well, you know, the interesting thing, when we went to the airport in Huntington, they still had those machines where you could put 25 cents in for flight insurance.
Uh-huh.
And everybody was in those machines putting those quarters in there. And I researched the airlines, and the safest airline with the safest record was Delta. And And so we took that particular airline and flew them all the time we were there, and then also the rest of my career, I used Delta.
Yeah.
Now, I also took my wife on that trip with me, and it was a little difficult, and unfortunately, I believe, or fortunately, whatever way you look at it, we took off in the direction of the crash, and of course, as we took off, and everyone looked down at the spot,
sure.
And I know for years that foliage never grew back, but the last time I flew in there, I noticed now that most of that foliage is all back in there.
Right. You know, something I also want to mention, Jack, I want to kind of go into a different direction here a little bit. You know, we've talked about the team getting back together, turning this thing back around, rebuilding, reflying, you know, getting on an airplane, you know, all those kind of things, which takes us up to today when we're talking about the annual ceremony that just happened a couple of days ago for the fountain being turned off. Tell us a little bit about that, when, you know, your experiences with the fountain, and then I know you've been involved in something as far as when the a ceremony with the fountain being turned back on.
If you recall, Harry Bertoia, the sculptor that made the fountain, his statement about the fountain is it represents the living rather than commemorating death in the waters of life, rising, renewing, reaching to express upward growth, immortality, and in eternity.
Mm-hmm.
And as I thought about that, that really, I think, exemplifies the dedication and commitment that the Young Thundering Herd made to rebuild that football program. So I wrote a letter to the president and also to the athletic director, Mike Hamrick, requesting the opportunity for the Young Thundering Herd. No one was turning the fountain on, so I requested that the Young Thundering Herd and their families be allowed to turn the fountain on in the spring in conjunction with the spring game.
Yeah.
So every Saturday before the spring game in the morning, we have a ceremony where the Young Thundering Herd members and the current football team meet at the fountain, and the families of all the team players and coaches are invited, and we turn the fountain on, exemplifying the beginning, the renewing of the Marshall University football program. With their approval, we started that tradition, and I'm very, very pleased the administration allowed us to do that. And that ceremony it will go on with the team members and their families for years and years to come.
Right. Hey, Jack, looking back on the entire event, we've got to kind of wrap things up here just a little bit, but looking back on the entire event that you've been involved with of this tragedy, what advice would you have for someone quickly here that has experienced tragedy and they're trying to rebuild? What advice would you have for them?
I'll tell you an interesting story. I got a call from Canadian Public Television about 2 years ago. A lady had seen the movie Weir Marshall, and they had a tragic accident in Bathurst, New Brunswick in Canada. And it was a basketball team coming home from a basketball game, and it was snowing, et cetera. And as they were making the turn to go off the off-ramp, they slid sideways, and they were in this 15-passenger van and hit a semi head-on. And the coach's wife was killed. Mm-hmm. Seven basketball players were killed. And so she called me and asked me if I would send a condolence letter to the coach, which I did. I called the school. She had already started. The principal had already started the process. And so I mentioned to her what we did at Marsh University and some of the circumstances that we had to face, and giving her some suggestions about what we did, and hopefully that it would be of value to her. And then my closing statement was, if I can help you further, please don't hesitate to call me. About 2 weeks later, she called me back. There was some hesitation in her voice, and I said, look, I'll be glad to fly up to Bathurst. And it's a little town, about 12,000 people. The school has 700 students. So I said, I'll be glad to pay my own expenses to come up there, which I did. They had two sessions, one for the 9th and 10th grade and 11th and 12th grade, and I would share with them and the faculty and the staff that the real key is that life is full of adversity, and life is not fair, but life goes on, and how we face that adversity determines our character and our ability to move on, and that's what the friends and the classmates and teams and that you lost. The best thing to do is to remember the memories of the good times you had together when you shared with each other, and remember them and continue to love them.
Right.
And remember in your heart, that's how you honor them, and life is about choices.
Mm-hmm.
And every situation is a choice, and you have to choose how to react to the situations. And the bottom line is, it's your choice and how you live your life, but destiny is not a matter of chance. It's really a matter of choice. So I think it's important that you share, continue to love them, remember the memories of the good times, and move on forward. Continue to keep them in your heart.
That's great advice, Jack. It really is. I really appreciate you being our guest today, Coach Jack Lingle, the 1971 head football coach of Marshall University football team. Jack, thank you so much for your insight, your wisdom, and for your ability to be able to share a story with all of us of something, an event that really happened, and put your own take on it there. We really appreciate you being with us today.
Well, Fred, thank you very much. As you know, I come back to Huntington at least once a year, and Huntington is always my second home, and love all the people, and want to continue to thank them for all they've done for Marshall and continue their support. There's no other university in the country, nor our community, nor a state, that has made a commitment to and bonded together, and as I said before, everyone's heart beats as one.
Absolutely. Today our guest has been Coach Jack Lingle on Planning for Tomorrow, and we hope that the show has been very enjoyable and provided some insight to you. We'll see you next time. You're listening to 94.1 FM and AM 930 WRVC.
And here I am listening to that interview with Jack Lingle, and I know that everybody has some memories of that night, November the 14th, 1970, and the days after that when this entire community and other communities, too, were mourning the loss of them. My particular remembrance is of Matt Ralston and his wife, Flip, who were supporters of the team and who were in that plane crash. And he happened to be a member of Huntington City Council at that time. And the very next meeting of council after the plane crash, I recall that, of course, his seat was empty and simply a bud vase with a rose sat in his place. That's one of my remembrances. And, of course, also, I think that's the first time that I have ever attended a double funeral of Flip and his wife. Others may remember the fact that he actually had a clothing store on 4th Avenue. And on a personal note, I now live in the house that Matt and Flip owned. And we love that home, but I often think of Matt and Flip Ralston, who were two of the supporters who died in the plane crash. So think about them, and I think it's good to have that memorial every year. Maybe eventually people will stop doing it, but not for now.
This is Huntington's News and Information Station, Supertalk, 94.1 FM and AM 930, WRVC Huntington.